Congress turns its attention to equal pay. From Marketplace, I'm Sabri Benishore, in for David Brancaccio. The House of Representatives has passed an equal pay measure to combat the gender pay gap, which is, by the way, 82 cents to the dollar between women and men. The gap is even worse for women of color. The bill passed along party lines. Marketplace's Nova Sappho's here with more. Hi, Nova.
Good morning, Sabri.
So this bill is called the Paycheck Fairness Act. What would it do exactly?
Well, a lot of it is about enforcement, Sabri, giving existing regulations more teeth. It makes it easier for employees to sue over pay discrimination. It requires companies to submit detailed pay data to the federal government, and that data can be used for enforcement purposes. There are some other provisions as well.
This passed on basically a party line vote. Why? What are Republicans objecting to here?
Yeah, there was one Republican, Pennsylvania Congressman Brian Fitzpatrick, who voted in favor. Now, what's going on is businesses oppose this bill. The U.S. Chamber of Commerce came out against it. It's worried about potentially making class action lawsuits easier to mount. And Republicans are echoing that concern. They also say we have laws already in place on this issue of pay discrimination. But the Chamber of Commerce also points to something else, Sabri, that's in the bill. Right now, companies have a number of ways they can defend themselves against unequal pay claims. They can say it's based on experience, for example, not gender. But this bill would impose new limits on those kinds of defenses, and the Chamber opposes that.
Interesting. Considering all of the opposition, what are the bill's chances, do you think?
Well, the president supports it, but it's got to clear the Senate. And with the Republican opposition, its chances are not so good, Sabri.
All right. Nova, thanks. Stock markets are windows into how investors view the future for publicly traded companies anyway, and it's looking bright. The S&P and Dow both reached all-time highs yesterday, the Dow closing above 34,000 for the first time. And China reported GDP there jumped 18.3% in the first quarter. Here's our China correspondent, Jennifer Pack.
China's GDP growth this first quarter was always expected to be really high because it's being compared to a low base from the same period last year. That's when much of the country was under a lockdown and the Chinese economy contracted by 6.8%. Now, if you compare this first quarter to pre-pandemic levels, China's economy grew at about 5%. The growth this quarter is pushed by increased demand from both home and abroad. Factory output grew by 14%. Manufacturers were racing to fill orders from the U.S. and the rest of the world. Here in China, more shoppers returned to restaurants, malls, and car dealerships. Retail sales in March increased by more than 30%. But this growth streak is expected to moderate later this year. Unemployment is still hovering around 5%. China's central bank might cool down credit growth to rein in debt and financial risk. There's a real concern about the property market being overheated. Also, tensions between China and the U.S. and Europe could also hurt trade. In Shanghai, I'm Jennifer Pack for Marketplace.
The pause in the use of the Johnson & Johnson one-shot vaccine is a challenge for an otherwise successful vaccination campaign in the U.S. Vaccination has accelerated dramatically over the past 2 months. 37% of people in the U.S. have gotten at least one dose, and fewer people express hesitancy or opposition to getting vaccinated. Still, pockets remain where uptake is lower than average. Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman reports.
The Kaiser Family Foundation reports that the share of Americans who want a COVID shot right away or have already been vaccinated has nearly doubled to over 60% since December. But Black Americans lag behind white and Latinx people in their enthusiasm to get vaccinated. Researcher Ashley Kurtzinger says that reflects lack of information and access. She cites a recent survey of rural Americans that found Black adults
less likely to say they have enough information about where to get vaccinated, when they're eligible, and reported having to travel further.
In Kansas City, Missouri, Reverend Eric Williams of Calvary Temple Baptist Church promotes COVID education in the Black community. He says vaccination is picking up, but
places that we could beef up are with the elderly and more door-to-door campaigns.
The APM Research Lab reports 13.5% of Black Missourians have been vaccinated, compared to 22.7% of the state's white residents. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
During lockdowns, domestic violence rose by an average 8% in the U.S. and worldwide, according to the Council on Criminal Justice. That number, 8%, is based on what's reported, as in people who were able to seek help. It could represent just a fraction of the abuse that victims have been suffering in the pandemic. Natasha Sinjanovic has the story, and a warning, it contains details of abuse that may be disturbing to some listeners.
Social isolation, unemployment, high stress. It sounds like pandemic life, but these are also the conditions that lead to the most severe violence. Being trapped at home with an abuser makes it even worse.
Access to a victim increases domestic violence, whether it's intimidation, harassment, physical violence, sexual violence, verbal abuse.
Ruth Glenn heads the National Coalition Against Domestic Violence. She says calling for help when an abuser is nearby is dangerous, and likely why many police departments have received fewer 911 calls for domestic incidents during COVID. Meanwhile, in many places, there's also been a dramatic spike in domestic aggravated assaults. Those are strangulations, stabbings, or shootings. Diane Lance is a national expert on family violence.
The proportion of abuse is so much more severe.
One reason for that, she says, is because victims are waiting longer to get to shelters. That was the experience of one Memphis woman in lockdown. We're not using her name to protect her safety.
The more we were not able to do anything, the worse he got.
She says her ex-husband became violent gradually over their four-year relationship. He often threatened to kill her if she left him and hit her where her injuries wouldn't show. But last summer, she says, he lost all control.
He threw me up against the wall and he kicked me really hard in my stomach while I was throwing up blood.
In Memphis, domestic homicides nearly doubled last year from 2019. That's the kind of data that went into the new report for the Council on Criminal Justice, says lead author Alex Piquero. He's sociology chair at the University of Miami. The researchers studied hundreds of records, including arrests, 911 calls, and hospitalizations. And Piquero notes,
remember, this is physical violence. I'm convinced that the emotional violence is even higher because there's never an arrest for an emotional violence.
Which is why, he says, the full effect of the pandemic on victims will never be known. In Nashville, I'm Natasha Sinjanovic for Marketplace.
Our executive producer is Nicole Childers. Our digital producer is Alex Schroeder. Our engineers are Brian Allison and Jay Siebold. And I'm Sabri Benishore with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.